Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Artist First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard, and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You are tuning into Unique, Life Starring You. This show airs every Monday at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For more information about this show and to listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/unique.htm, and that's unique with a Y-O-U. And I'd like to ask you to don't forget to follow Artist First on Twitter. The Twitter handle is artist_first. And now here's your host of Unique, Susan Stackpole.
Thanks so much, Corey, and thank you, listeners, for joining us here on YOU Unique, Life Starring You, all about you, for you, and we are what we are because of you, so thank you so much for joining us. For those of you who are new to the program, every week we ask you to pray it forward, which is simply when you see things in the news media that are a little disconcerting. There are scientific studies that show putting love and meditation and happy thoughts towards those things can actually shift the energy. So we appreciate those of you who are doing it and those of you who are new joining us this week. Tonight, we are just extraordinarily honored to welcome with us an amazing gentleman. I'll share with you a little bit about him, and we'll welcome him to the program. His name is Guy Kawasaki, and he's the co-founder of alltop.com, that's alltop.com, which is an online magazine rack of popular topics on the web, and he's a founding partner of Garage Technology Ventures. Previously, he was the chief evangelist of Apple. He's the author of 10 books, including Enchantment, Reality Check, The Art of the Start, Rules for Revolutionaries, How to Drive Your Competition Crazy, Selling the Dream, and The Macintosh Way. Guy has a BA from Stanford University and an MBA from UCLA, as well as an honorary doctorate from Babson College. And we could go on and on, but it'd be more fun to hear about it from Guy himself. Please welcome to the program, Guy Kawasaki. Welcome to the program, Guy.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on your program.
Well, we just are absolutely delighted, and you just have so much wisdom and innovative ideas and creativity to share with us, so we're just really excited to hear what you have to say.
That's quite a reputation I have to live up to.
you've already done it, so it's already done. For those of our listeners who may not be completely familiar with you, have you always had a penchant for business? I just have this vision in my head of the TV show Family Ties, of Michael J. Fox's character Alex Keaton, where he just was, you know, really on in life, knew that he was passionate about business. Is that something that applies to you, or is it something that came more organically over time?
Well, it's very easy to look back and say, yeah, I always knew, or yeah, you know, I planned this, and both of those would be lies. I'm 57 years old. I really started, you know, working in business in about 1980 or so. So that's a good 31 years. So, you know, that's how long I've known. How's that?
Okay.
up to then, I was flying blind.
Guy, one of the things that you're so brilliant at, and in some respects, it's just such a gift of just understanding the mechanics of business and helping people to succeed, and especially in Enchantment, which, by the way, for our listeners, if you do not have that book, rush to get it, because I just think whatever area of life that you're in, it will definitely help you succeed. And you just have this way of breaking things down and saying, well, here's how to get from point A to point B, and how to, you know, provide not only a quality product, but something that's true to the name of our show, very unique, that really kind of is going to help propel society as a whole forward. You're just really a true visionary. Is that just a natural gift that you kind of came by, or do you feel like these are things that you learned through business school and getting your MBA and that sort of thing?
Well, I think I learned it in the past 30 years. You could make the argument that it took you 30 years. You know, maybe I'm not such a quick study. But I've been very fortunate. I work for Steve Jobs, which is a very interesting experience, to put it mildly, a valuable experience. And I have to say that if there was, you know, the single greatest influence on my business career, it was Steve Jobs. And, you know, you use the visionary word to describe me. And, you know, not that I'm particularly humble, but I will tell you that I am not a visionary. I think in, you know, truly in modern history, there have been about three visionaries. And I would say that Thomas Edison was one, Walt Disney was another, and Steve Jobs was the third. And there are very few other people who are in that category, and not to me, for example. So those people are truly visionaries.
Okay. One of the things that you had said about Steve Jobs, Guy, is that the starting point of changing the world is changing a few minds. Could
yes.
you share with us a little bit about the importance of that, about why that's significant?
Sure. You know, when you look back and you say, well, Apple sells tens of millions of things and Microsoft sells tens of millions of copies of operating systems and all that, you might think, oh, so those people started off with these grandiose ideas and they had these big plans and it was always their, you know, dream to dominate the world like this. In fact, most of these companies started off with two guys or two gals in a garage just trying to make something neat. And trying to make something neat involves changing, you know, one or two people, other minds, and it's not this grandiose thing. It really is sort of blocking and tackling one person at a time, and then one day you wake up and now it's hundreds of people, and then you wake up again and it's thousands of people, and then you wake up again and it's tens of thousands of people, and you know, that's how the real world works. The people who start off with these grandiose ideas of you know, affecting millions of people, usually they fail. Because you know they're so worried and you know, sort of delusional about the day when they have tens of millions of people using their product that they can't even ship the first version. So you know, start small, take it easy, and just you know realize that entrepreneurship is really it's a marathon. It's not a sprint.
Excellent advice. And I think that you make such an important distinction, too, about that these are people that started out that it wasn't about the money and it wasn't about the success and it wasn't about the fame and it wasn't about building the biggest company. It was that they really had passion for what it was that they were creating. And especially with Steve, it seemed like all through his career, that really is what was first and really driving with that passion. Could you share a little bit about why that's so important to success?
Well, it's important to success because the path to success is a long, winding, uphill and bumpy road. And you know, and that's the good news. That's if you're lucky. So, you know, if you're not passionate about what you do, God, at any given point, you know, all of those things are going to swamp you. So it's a fine line between, you know, obsession and delusion and, you know, craziness. I mean, an entrepreneur is all of the above. It's just that, you know, the entrepreneurs that are successful, we proclaim as visionaries and, you know, all the good stuff. The entrepreneurs that are not successful, we just say they're nutcases. So there's a fine line between a nutcase and an entrepreneur.
Very excellent distinction. I like that. Guy, one of your talents seems to be really helping businesses hone in on branding themselves well and really presenting themselves in the best way possible. And would love to get your opinion on, you know, things throughout history and even modern day. You know, you take something like the Tia Pet that, you know,
yeah.
had the crazy success. And modern day, you know, you've got things like the Snuggie and that sort of thing that maybe isn't necessarily, quote-unquote, a quality product. What do you feel like is the key with those particular products gaining the notoriety and success that they have?
Probably luck.
Okay.
you know, I think, you know, it's easy to have the market done our filtering. So now we can look back and say, okay, so, you know, now I'll explain the Chia, and now I'll explain the Snuggly, and now I'll explain Macintosh and iPhone and iPod and iPad, and now I'll explain, you know, Virgin America versus Pan American. And, you know, but the the truth is that at the time, if you had to make a decision, you know, would you have picked a chia? Would you have picked a snuggly? I doubt it. And so, you know, this is the equivalent of you throw something against the wall, and whatever sticks, you go up to the wall and you paint a bullseye around it, and you say, ah, I hit the bullseye. That's kind of how life works.
So in terms of nowadays, we have social media that just has opened up a whole new opportunity. And one of the things I was thinking about, actually, as I was reading through Enchantment, was it relative to the Kardashians building the brand empire that they have.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if you could speak to us a little bit about how significant and what tools are at people's disposal in terms of social media and how that's changed the game.
Well, it's changed the game tremendously because you know, Twitter and Facebook and now Google Plus, it's basically fast, free, and ubiquitous. I mean, you can't get much better than that. So before, at an extreme, you'd buy a Super Bowl commercial, and, you know, it's, I don't know, $2 million to make it, $5 million to run it, I don't know, $5-10 million. And not to say that you're going to reach 100 million people with a tweet or a Facebook wall post or a Google Plus post, but you know, per dollar, it's much, much more effective. So this is a great time to be a marketing person because all of that stuff is fast, free, and ubiquitous. I mean, it couldn't get much better.
Excellent. Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And it opens up a whole new world of opportunities, as you pointed out, that before, just if the capital wasn't there to buy into a Super Bowl ad, then forget about it.
Yep. Yeah, and, you know, we've come a long way since then. I'm amazed that people still run Super Bowl commercials. I don't know who benefits from that, but somebody must because they're paying a lot of money for it.
It's funny, when I was in marketing school, that was actually part of our homework, was studying the Super Bowl commercials to see, you know, what we could learn or what worked and what didn't. So.
And what did you learn?
That it was really sort of the luck of the draw, and typically it was the more entertaining commercials that weren't necessarily plugging the product, but that were entertaining on some level. Like going back to like when they had the Budweiser frogs, you know, things like that. That seemed to be what resonated the most with people.
Yeah, I mean, that's using the test of resonation or whatever, but you know, the real test is, did it sell more beer?
Right.
That's a good question. I mean, it's not clear to me it did.
Right, absolutely. Like, I don't know that it necessarily... Now, when you're marketing to a bunch of college students who are going to go buy beer anyway, I don't know that, you know, in terms of them buying Budweiser over the competition, if it did anything, I wouldn't know. But that was... that, and that's a really interesting point that you're making about... Talk to us a little bit about that guy, because one of the things that you talk about, especially with Enchantment, and you get into the, and you, oh my gosh, you've written so many great things, and I just encourage anyone who's listening, GuyKawasaki.com, check it out, go buy the books, because you are so great at sort of breaking things down and say, you know, this is what we're looking at, and this is why you should do it and not something. Talk to us a little bit about research and how that plays into things, because you've got a great take on this that's really helpful for business owners. Because I think sometimes a lot of business owners, a firm will come and say, oh, well, if you pay us X amount of dollars, we can deliver all this, you know, scientific research for you. Share with us a little bit about how and why that either is or isn't effective in different scenarios.
Well, I think that to create a revolution that is something that's 10 times better than the status quo, that's on a different curve from the rest of the world, it's very difficult to use market research, because when you talk to people, mostly they're going to tell you to make bigger, faster, cheaper, whatever they already have. And that's not what you want. You want people to tell you, you know, for example, if you're using a MS-DOS machine or an Apple II, you want people to tell you that they want a Macintosh. But how can they tell you they want a Macintosh? Because they've never seen a Macintosh. They don't know what, you know, graphical user interface is. I mean, how do they? It would be like asking a fish to describe how to fly.
Excellent analogy.
So now I think people are very good to tell you how to revise a product or service, but wow, not clear to me that they could tell you how to create a revolution.
Do you think that it's fair to say then the best products are the products that people never knew that they needed until they came out? Like you take something like the iPad that, you know, a lot of people are like, wow, I just, you know, didn't know how incomplete my life was without this, or the iPod or something along those levels. Would you say that that's a key in terms of, you know, product longevity and innovation and that sort of thing?
Well, it certainly has worked for Apple. I mean, I don't think you can say that it works for everybody the same, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But you know, I could maybe Apple is the only company it works for. But you know, I think one of the ways you become successful in business is that you look at what a lot of people have done. And then you try your own. And, you know, you shouldn't assume that what's good for Apple is good for you and vice versa. So, but, you know, it's all a learning process. I think if you really understood what happens with many of these companies, they got lucky. And so, you know, but luck is not a strategy. So that's not that easy.
Right, absolutely. Guy, we have quite a few entrepreneurs that are listening, whether they're people in the service industry that are marketing and branding themselves as an individual or independent businesses and that sort of thing. What are one or two tips that you would give them that you feel are the keys to sort of at least start moving in the right direction to sort of supercharge their success?
Well, supercharge is a strong word. I mean, if I could just provide a way for everybody to supercharge their business. First of all, I wouldn't give it away on the radio.
Good point.
You know, it truly, well, I think, you know, step one is to just ship. I mean, you know, get something out there. I think many people, you know, they don't realize that you really don't learn anything till you ship. And, you know, you're sitting in a dark cave trying to create this perfect product. You'd learn more being out in the market in 2 weeks than you will, you know, in a year, just cogitating on your own.
Excellent. That's an excellent point. Would you say that in some cases we hear it's such a common theme that we've heard on the show that it's actually this idea of perfectionism that actually prevents a lot of people from being successful because
they
become consumed by the detail?
Yeah, I think that perfectionism is the enemy of entrepreneurship. And now, I'm not saying that you shouldn't try to ship good stuff, but there's a difference between good stuff and perfect stuff. And the odds are you're not going to ship perfect stuff anyway, because until you get out to the customers, you won't know what perfection is. So by definition, if you want to ship something perfect, you have to take it out to the customers. And when you take it out to the customers, you'll figure out that it's not perfect. So, you know, that's why you should ship.
And that's one of the things that you talk about, especially with Steve Jobs, that he was, you know, a master of in terms of, even if it wasn't 1,000%, it was, you know, 999%, and they got it into the consumer's hands, and that was key, correct?
Well, you know, truth be known, it was not 999.9% or 99.9%. It was more like... I would say it's, you know, closer to 55%, but 55% is still about 45% better than most people. So, you know, we're talking about this concept of perfection and this concept of, you know, Apple had it all right and all the time. You know, I can name a lot of failures for you if you want from Apple.
Well, no, but in that context, I appreciate you bringing that up because I think that that's something important for people to listen to, especially now with the economy and everything that's going on, that you can either use it to bolster you and say, okay, I'm going to take a different approach, or for, you know, people who maybe don't have quite as thick of a skin, say, okay, I'm going to give up. And I just think that's an important point to focus on that as much success as Apple has had, they've also had trials and failures and that sort of thing, and the willingness to keep going is part of why they are where they are.
Well, you know, it's case in point, Steve Jobs did get fired. Can't get worse than that.
Okay.
But you know, I think what people have to understand is it really is a marathon. It's not, you know, a particular 9-second sprint. And Apple created, I'll tell you some Apple failures. You know, Apple failed with the Apple III, the Newton. You might even make the case that Macintosh, because it only got 5%, some people would consider that a failure. So, and you know, today Apple's considered the most successful company ever. So, well, I don't know about ever, but, you know, right now anyway. So, it's a tricky world. It's a tricky world. I truly do believe it's better to be lucky than smart.
Wow. Powerful statement. Powerful statement.
Especially if you're lucky.
Right. I know what to pray for tonight before I go to sleep. Guy, one of the things that you talk about, I think, is such a significant point that a lot of, both from a consumer standpoint and a business owner standpoint, that a lot of people either overlook or they don't realize, is that value is different from price. Could you share with people why that's the significant
yes.
point?
You know, I think when you read particularly what the experts are saying, they're always talking about price, but if you have a product that is sophisticated, that is for sophisticated people, you know, it's not so much the price as much as the value. So in the personal computer business, yes, you could probably buy a laptop that costs less than a MacBook. But when you add in things like the cost of conversion, the cost of training, the cost of setup, the resale ability at the end of a few years when you want to upgrade, then, you know, maybe a Macintosh is cheaper. And the same thing is true about cars. You know, the cheapest car on day one is not necessarily the cheapest car through the 5 or 10 years that you own it. So, you know, you have to think of value sometimes, not just price.
Right. And I think that's an important point to make as well to our entrepreneurs and business owners and that sort of thing is that, you know, ultimately what you want to sell is the value of the product. And what you said about the car example, that's an excellent example as well, because it's like, you know, if you buy a car and it's got all sorts of bells and whistles, but if it's at the low end in terms of price, you want to find out, like other people who have had that vehicle, how many repairs are there and
yep.
all that sort of thing. So I think that's a really excellent point. Thank
of course, you know, I don't, of course, it's always the high price producer that makes this argument. You ever notice that? I don't think that's a coincidence, you know?
Well, no, but at the same time, I think there's a lot to be said for that. In any business, one of the things that comes to mind is entertainment, is the people who really are willing to commit are often, they might not necessarily be the most talented in the bunch and that sort of thing, but one of the things I say in my own life is show up like you mean it. And so I think there's a lot to be said for that in any aspect of business. But you're right. It's usually the high producer. So I'm going to be paying attention to that going forward. Definitely put that on my radar. For any listeners who may just be joining us, we're here with Guy Kawasaki. Please visit Guy's website at www.guykawasaki.com. Guy, one of the things we'd love to have you share a little bit more with our listeners about is Intantment, the art of changing hearts, minds, and actions. Tell us a little bit about how the inspiration for that book and concept came to you.
Well, you know, when people ask me what made you write the book, I often tell them royalty, and they don't know what to do when I say that.
I love the candor. I love it. It's fantastic. I wish more people in the world were as candid as you are. That's one of my
qualities. You might not wish that. You be careful what you ask for. So listen, you know, I became a real fan of Bob Cialdini, who wrote a book called Influence. And I also read Dale Carnegie's book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. And I looked at those two books, and I said, you know, God, I want to write a book like this. I want to write a book that's timeless, that it'll help people change the world, and, you know, all this kind of good stuff. And so I studied both books, and I have the advantage of social media, right? So Dale Carnegie wrote his book in the 1930s or something, so he didn't exactly have Twitter, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I had this advantage, and I just said, well, let's just go for it. It took me about a year. I spent a lot of time studying social psychology. And in my career, since 1979 or so, I've had to enchant people, whether it's for Macintosh or software or, you know, whatever companies I was working for. So it's what it took. And I wrote, this book is very tactical. It's not one of these kind of, you know, mega something. This is everything in my books are micro. I mean, I'm trying to get people to be able to, you know, take a book and mark it up. And, you know, as soon as they read it, read a chapter, they change stuff in what they do. That's the test for a business author, that, you know, you effectuate change. It's not, I don't know what you do with some of these business books that tell you, you know, by the year 2020 that the population is going to be older or younger or, you know, whatever, so you should do this. I mean, I don't know. What do you do with that? So
Exactly. Well, and one of the things, and standing here, you can't see it, nodding my head, I just think, like I said, and it's not something I'm saying just because you're on the program. Seriously, for any of our listeners, GuyKawasaki.com or Amazon or Barnes & Noble or whatever, but go and get this book, because exactly what you said, it immediately in the book, like, there's practical things that you can use, not just in business, but in life in general, in terms of your relationships with people and just presenting yourself, whether it's in your job or if you're an entrepreneur and that sort of thing. Just really excellent. And like you said, there's not necessarily, business books aren't always necessarily written that way. You go through a lot of text and formulas and different things, and you'll maybe get a few things that you can use, and sometimes it's not even things you can use right now. It's, you know, a year from now, once you have the capital raised and that sort of thing. So I thought that was a really great strategy, and it's gotten really, really positive reviews as well. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Guy, share with our listeners a little bit about just what the idea of enchantment is, because I think for different people that has a different meaning. So for you specifically, what does that mean?
Enchantment for me is the process of creating this relationship with people that's deep, it's mutually beneficial, and it's voluntary. And so, you know, Apple enchants its customers, whereas most computer companies bludgeon their customers. So it's a very different kind of relationship. And, you know, once if you can enchant your customer, it makes life a lot easier, boy. You know, to get people to support you and help you and evangelize you, and it really is a remarkable thing, and I've seen it happen with Macintosh in particular.
I think that's just a clear distinction, too, that you said about enchanting versus blessing your customers, because I think that that's what happens a lot of time, and especially with the Apple brand, oh my gosh, you know, people have said, you know, when the iPhone came out, it's like, oh my gosh, if my iPhone were a person, I would marry it. And, you know, once you go Mac, you don't go back. And, you know, different things and different things like that, and it just is, you know, to have people just not only fall in love with the product, but then at that point, they're just so loyal that it doesn't matter sort of at that point, like whatever Apple does, it's like they just can't get enough. They're like, okay, I just, you know, whatever it is, they're the first in line to do that.
Yeah, it's a little scary sometimes, you know.
You've got that mob fan mentality. Well, it's kind of like when I mentioned earlier about the, you know, they were on Piers Morgan, and he was talking to the Kardashians about the brand that they have. And when I was reading through the book, there's actually some things about them that when you were talking about the different components of being enchanted, I was like, wow, it seems like that they have really sort of enchanted an entire fan base, that whatever they do, people just can't wait to sort of tune in and see what's next.
I got to tell you that I never thought I'd hear the day when Macintosh and my book and the Kardashians were all put in the same sentence.
I apologize if that's...
It's not clear to me that that's a good thing, but...
Okay. I guess the point that I was trying to make, Guy, was just that there's not any sort of one particular, like, skill set or sort of outstanding thing that it seems, and other people have commented in the interview with Piers Morgan that, you know, he had said that as well, that there's not any particular talent or product or thing, you know, even their clothing line isn't, you know, particularly outstanding in any aspect. And yet with Twitter and social media and that sort of thing, from the standpoint of being enchanted, it seems like there's an entire fan base that just, you know, similar to the way that people get with the Apple brand, it's just like whatever they're doing next, it's like whether it's fragrance or clothing or whatever, they want a part of that.
And
it's, it is. It's a little. It's powerful stuff. So I guess that I didn't mean to insult you. It's just the point that I was trying to make is that this idea of enchantment. I think if you do it right on some level, it's almost intoxicating. It's like being around someone who makes you feel really comfortable and welcome. You know, it's like people just can't get enough of that. It's like they start, you know, coming over to your house and staying later and later and that sort of thing. But that's what that's ultimately what you want if you're selling a product, correct? Is for people to just sort of be mesmerized.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
One of the things that is in the tagline of the book is this idea of changing people's hearts, minds, and actions. Could you share with us a little bit about why that's significant? Because there's some business books out there that will say, well, you know, find your target market and then cater to them, versus what you're saying more is changing them to sort of meet where you are, which is one of the things in using the example from Apple that they sort of did, is they're coming out with products people had never seen and that sort of thing. Share with us a little bit about why that's important to change people's minds and hearts and actions.
Well, you know, it may not be important for everybody. I think it's most important for the companies that have products that are really innovative. So arguably, the more innovative your product or service, the more you're going to need it. And I'm writing this book for what I think or who I hope are very innovative people. So, if you have a product that is a Me Too product, 10-15% better, probably the right thing to do is to compete on price. But if you have something that's radically different, it's going to take more than that. It's going to take, some reality distortion evangelism. And it's going to take enchanting your customer, not just promoting price to your customer. So that's what I'm trying to do.
Excellent. And I think that's a really important point for people to understand, is this idea of innovation and the people who have really set out to make things, maybe not intending to change the world, but that really, really have. One of the things that you said in Enchantment, which I thought was a really great point, was that getting others to like you means accepting and finding something to like in them. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
You know, it's very rare that someone will like you if you don't accept them, you know, if you want to change them and if you don't like them. And if you want to be enchanting, you have to be likable. And if you want to be likable, you have to accept others for what they are and not try to change them. And this is, you know, race, creed, color, sexual orientation, religion, you name it. You should accept people for what they are. And I have another theory that basically everybody you meet, literally everybody you meet, is better than you at something. So, you know, you may be the world's greatest mathematician, but the person you just met can cook better than you. Or you may be the, you know, world's greatest marketing person, the person you just met can raise kids better than you. So, you know, you shouldn't walk around with this attitude that you're the greatest, because you aren't the greatest at everything.
Oh, I love that. It brings to mind one of the guests that we had on had the opportunity to work with Michael Brecker, who's a famous jazz player, and he said that was kind of his attitude, was that everyone has something that they can teach you. And
yep.
I raise that point just because I think it's significant in the sense of that you have the level of success and you've worked with all the amazing people that you have and that you're sharing that, it seems in some respects that there are some people, the higher that they go, the more humility that they have. And so I think that that's a really important point that I'm especially glad that you shared, having the wealth of experience that, that you have. So thank you for bringing that to the,
sure.
bringing that to the show. One of the other things that you talk about, Guy, is the importance of trust in building these relationships, and specifically in relationship to enchantment. Share with us a little bit about why trust is so important.
Well, trust is so important because in many cases you're going to ask people to go out on a limb and, you know, try a product that hasn't been proven, or, you know, that millions of people haven't bought yet. And I say that the three pillars of our enchantment are trustworthiness, likability, and greatness. And you need all three. If you could pick just one, the hardest one is greatness. I think it's much easier to achieve likability and trustworthiness than to achieve greatness in, you know, product or service. But you need all three. And when you hit all three, like with Apple, I mean, that's what you get. It's this major success.
Wow. And those are some big, you know, Apple is some big shoes to fill in terms of when you talk about greatness. I know it was just recently in the news media that Apple actually has more cash, I think they said, than the government. So maybe we should be saying, you know, maybe that's who we should put in charge. But I think that that's an excellent point. One of the other things that you talk about is this idea of marketing kind of comes down to adding unique value. And what I was wondering is if somebody, if a business or an individual is working really hard to find the unique value that they're adding, is that perhaps because it's not really that unique and maybe go back to the drawing board and take another look at it or update the product or something like
that? Well, that certainly can be one of the issues. But a good team will not ship something that's not remarkable and then figure it out and then say, oh, we got to fix it. You know, I mean, that's kind of backwards, you know what I mean? That a great team would never have gotten to that point. Because, you know, this is not about slapping lipstick on a pig. I mean, you should, right? I mean, once you have the pig, it's very hard to make a nice-looking pig. I mean, I suppose it's possible, but that's not optimal. So,
right. Right. No, and that's an excellent point. I just bring that up because there's so many people now with the economy and a lot of transition and things like that, that I think there's a lot of people looking to sort of find their purpose and find their way in the world. What advice would you offer up for them if there's people that have really, the last couple of years has been very transitory for a lot of people? What advice would you give, especially there's people their whole lives, they've worked in jobs that they've hated, and that job isn't there anymore, and now they're sort of going, well, okay, what do I want to do with myself? What would you say is the first step to take for people sort of moving forward and saying, this is who I am,
well,
this is my purpose?
You know, first of all, it's easy for me to give advice in this because I'm not the person, you know, having to risk everything, right? So I fully realize that. That's why it's better to be an author and a speaker than the person. but, you know, one thing Steve Jobs taught me is that some things need to be believed to be seen, which is the opposite of how you usually hear, you know, you hear it, some things need to be seen to be believed.
Right.
And you have to believe. And now, I wish I could say that everybody who believes is right. That's not true. But, boy, if you don't believe and you don't try, you will never know. So I think that it is a matter of belief. I would encourage people to, you know, step back from the what I call the macro picture. So the macro picture is where you look at the statistics that come out from the government or whoever puts them out, and, you know, it says that unemployment is at record highs, or, you know, in the past month we lost a record number of jobs, you know, whatever they say, right? And so you look at that and you say, oh, my God, you know, I'll never get a job. Unemployment is 10% now, you know, it was highest since the 1930 depression, whatever, I don't know, whatever it is, right? But you know what? I mean, two things. One is, if 10% unemployment, guess what? How many people are employed? 90%. You know, 9 out of 10, that's not bad odds. So that's number one. And number two is, you really don't care if the unemployment is 1% or 9% or 10%. All you care about is your employment. So, you know, to take some extreme examples, let's say unemployment was 1%, but you don't have a job. You suck. I mean, life sucks, right? So you don't wake up in the morning saying, wow, unemployment is really low. I feel great. I don't have a job. So when unemployment is low and you don't have a job, life sucks. And when unemployment is high, but you do have a job, then hallelujah, what do you care? You're not in the 10%. So my key message here is, don't worry about the macro number. Don't let that get you into a funk. Just worry about yourself. All you care about is one number, you.
And I think that that's excellent advice. I know that even in my own business training, they sort of showed us the art of manipulating numbers, that if, you know, a company's domestic sales are down 80%, but the international sales are up 30%, then you just walk into me and go, hey, look, sales are up 30%. So it's a lot of what you focus on. I think that that's an excellent point, because I think that what people hear and see in the media often influences what they think is possible for themselves.
Yeah, and that's so, if they knew, you know, how these numbers are calculated, who's calculating them, then who's reporting them, they'd have to have their heads examined. I mean,
exactly. They wouldn't put so much stock in that it's like Bible in terms of, you know, that this is the ultimate truth, and so we should believe in this and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, even the Bible conflicts itself. So, you know, you just got to believe. I mean,
let's talk about that a little bit, Guy, in terms of people moving forward, because I know there's a lot of people that have just really been beaten down. And earlier you had mentioned in terms of innovators of our time, and you've got Thomas Edison and Walt Disney and Steve Jobs. One that resonated for me was Walt Disney, because when you look at his life, like, he was told, you know, that he wasn't, from an animation standpoint, he was told by, I think it was an art teacher, he wasn't very creative. When he went to go get loans to build Disney World and Disneyland and that sort of thing, he was told no, and that sort of thing. He just kept coming back, kept coming back, kept coming back. Very tenacious. What do you think the key is for that? Because I think a lot of people, it's like the minute they hear no, they stop believing in themselves. So what would you say is the key component to, you know, people really believing in themselves and moving forward in that space?
Well, the key thing is to ignore others. You know, I mean, everybody said you got to listen to everybody and all this kind of stuff. I mean, there's a case to be made that you ignore people, especially people who tell you can't be done, shouldn't be done, and isn't necessary. You know, I mean, but again, I wish I could tell you that whenever somebody says you'll fail, it means you'll succeed. It's not that easy either, but there truly is only one way to find out.
Well, Guy, we have just a few minutes left here. What is it that you would like our listeners to know moving forward? Do you have anything special coming up that you'd like to share with us?
Well, I'm just sort of heads down making speeches and doing a lot with social media. I'm trying to write another book. This book will be about Google+. And just loving life. I have 4 children, so I'm really busy with kids. And, you know, there are not too many people who are as busy as I am, because when you have 4 kids and they're at 4 different practices, 4 different tutors, 4 different sports, 4 different everything, life is complex.
Absolutely, absolutely. Just keeping all that straight in addition to everything else that you have going on.
And these radio interviews.
Right. Absolutely, which we are so grateful to have you here with us, for sure, especially given how busy and precious your time is. So thank you so much. Guy, just sort of one final thought. Is there any particular one mantra or piece of advice that you live by or that was particularly significant in
sure.
an aha moment in your life?
I think for me, it was learning that you should never ask people to do something that you yourself would not do. And so if you just apply that test to yourself, you know, are you asking your employees to do something you wouldn't do? Are you asking your spouse to do something that you wouldn't do? Are you asking your customers to do something that you wouldn't do? And if you are, you should, you know, take a step back and ask yourself, you know, am I doing this right? I mean, you know, how can I expect people to do it?
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Well, Guy, you just are an absolute pleasure, and like I said, your candor, absolutely refreshing. I wish that that became a staple characteristic in the world, because I feel like that's the way to sort of get things accomplished and get it done quick and move forward. So,
thank you.
Yeah, and thank you so much for all the wonderful books and articles and blogs and everything that you write, because it's just so helpful for people that maybe don't have that gift naturally to have a tactile, okay, step-by-step plan. So thank you so much.
Thank you. And, oh, you know, by the way, if people buy a copy of Enchantment right now, they also can get a copy of Presentation Zen, which is this great book about how to make great presentations. So is there a place I can send you a link so that you can point your listeners to it?
Sure. Yeah, we'll put it up on the website right under, right with your information. Definitely. Yep.
Okay, so I will send you an email with that link.
Excellent, excellent. And in the meantime, can they find that information on your website?
Yes. You know, if you just type Guy Kawasaki into Google, it's hard to miss me. So.
It is. Yes, absolutely. But that's an excellent lesson. That's the way that it's done, right?
Yes, it is.
That's a good example for the rest of us to follow. Well, Guy, you are just an absolute delight, and we certainly have enjoyed our time with you. Thank you so much
for taking
time out of your schedule to be with us, and best wishes to you.
Thank you. Best wishes to you, too. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you, listeners, for joining us here on Unique, Y-O-U, Unique Life Starring You. We were just here with GuyKawasaki.com. Please visit his website at www.guykawasaki.com. That's GuyKawasaki.com. And thank you for joining us this evening.